this particular evening, my niece decided to sneak out of the house to go to a party, and my daughter, Samantha, did not want her to get in trouble, so she got out of the house to go find her. Four white males in a black SUV with leather interior, four white males in this vehicle trying to get my daughter to go party with them, and she says no, and she starts walking faster. And they were being more persistent because they were just rolling along the sidewalk with her. And then she just takes off running. The vehicle stops. Two men jump out. They chase her down. And they pull her into that vehicle. And while one was driving, two held her down. And a third one raped her. They had on bandanas. They had used a condom. So this was premeditated rape. And they threw her out by a bridge. It hasn't changed. Violence and the targeted violence and being hunted as Native people, especially as Native women, has not changed in over 500 years.
Even though we're only approximately 2% of the population, we are trafficked, murdered, and raped at 5 to 10 times the national rate. The length of time it's been a problem goes back to when Columbus arrived. Columbus is the first known sex trafficker among Native American indigenous people.
Every year, hundreds of young Native American women and girls go missing from reservations as well as cities across the United States and Canada. Some are runaways, some are taken. Some of them return, others are never found. Murder is the third leading cause of death among Native women. I'm Leandra Neffin of the Omaha Tribe of Nebraska. I was born and raised on the Omaha Indian Reservation, located in the northeast corner of Nebraska. Istashende wa'ubadi, umaha ijaje wiwitate ambadagadi. I'm a Thunder Clan woman, and I belong to the Sky People. My Omaha name means coming of a beautiful day. I am also a trauma therapist working with survivors of sexual violence and abuse. And this is the documentary, Missing and Murdered, America's Forgotten Native Women and Girls. It's also the story of the Native women who are rising up to bring justice for the missing and murdered Indigenous women, or MMIW. There are 574 federally recognized tribes making up around 7 million people of Native origin in the U.S. today. That's less than 2% of the population. But we are disproportionately affected by violence and crime. 4 out of 5 Native women experience violence and sexual assault during their lifetime. That compares with 15 to 20% of non-Native women, and in some areas of the United States, Indian women are up to 10 times more likely to be murdered. To understand these shocking statistics, we have to go right back to colonization, to the 1500s, when the white settlers arrived in North America. Carrie Colfer from the Tlingit Tribe of Alaska is a legal advocate in Washington, D.C. She lobbies members of the U.S. Congress on Native American issues.
Violence against Native women is woven right into the story of colonization. Rape and sexual violence are tools of colonization and genocide, and they've been used against Indigenous women since first contact with the Europeans. But in addition, many tribes were and are matrilineal, so women were held in important and respected roles in their communities, and in order to assimilate Native people, these matrilineal societies were attacked.
From the 1800s, tribes were moved off their lands and onto reservations across the United States.
Natives were forcibly removed from their homelands onto other areas of the United States and placed onto reservations. And some tribes actually signed treaties with the United States government that gave up these lands. Many tribes were removed to areas that they were not familiar with, that were not their homelands. And so to then sort of live on a land that you don't know is very difficult, and it creates a lot of problems. And they didn't necessarily have the infrastructure or the funding in order to live in a way that is prosperous.
After tribes were displaced and settled on reservations, a program of assimilation was started to integrate Native people into white American society.
Native children were taken out of their communities and placed either in boarding schools or in non-Native, usually white homes. and they were forced to assimilate. They were forced to cut their hair, to give up their traditions and their culture, to not speak their language, so that they could become a part of American society. And this meant that most of them could not go home. And during these times, these children faced a lot of physical, emotional, and sexual abuse. It created generations of Native people, Native children, who felt they couldn't return home. They were not Native enough. They didn't remember their language. They didn't feel right returning home. But they also did not feel as if they were a part of American society because they were still Native. And so it created a really difficult position for a lot of Native people where they didn't feel like they belonged anywhere.
The trauma Native people went through, losing their lands, their culture, and language, led to many social problems that continue today.
So, bonjour. Mayangan Dalaram and Dojinakaz. I am Wolf Clan. Gao Babigana Gagadonjaba. I am from the White Earth Ojibwe Nation. Wasiwakakwe and Dojinakaz. I am Tornado Woman. My English name is Lisa Bruner.
Lisa Bruner is Executive Director of Sacred Spirits First Nations Coalition. She became a legal advocate for Native women on her reservation in Minnesota after her own traumatic childhood.
I grew up in a very violent home. My mom is from my tribe. She's an enrolled member here, as I am. Her partner was a white male, and the amount of violence that he was capable of was astounding. And as a little girl, watching this, growing up in this, trying to survive it. Well, I already grew up indoctrinated, if you will, that we as Native women were very much a particular target, having predators all around. Because during my entirety of my childhood, I had been sexually abused by 16 different people. I had been raped at 15. I had been raped again at 16.
According to the U.S. Department of Justice, nearly half of all Native American women, 46%, have experienced rape or physical violence by a partner. Most of the perpetrators are non-Native.
In their mind frame, we are still savages. We are deserving targets of their violence. We have the highest rates of violence committed against us as an entire people. And it's like 87 or 88% of those perpetrators are white. They're non-Native. We're still in this modern-day cowboys versus Indian. Not to say that our own men are not committing these crimes, or our women. They certainly are, but not at the statistical rate that we're seeing.
I'm just going to say it like it is. It's all part of the dope game.
Lissa Yellowbird Chase of the Mandan Hidatsa Arikara from the state of North Dakota says high levels of substance abuse and homelessness make Native women especially vulnerable to abuse and to being groomed and coerced into sex work.
Dope dealers and people that are quasi-dealers and users, they know the vulnerability that comes with addiction. And there's a surplus of people that are there to predate on vulnerable people.
It's believed this kind of exploitation could have been behind the disappearance of a young woman called Ashley Loring Heavy Runner in 2017.
Ashley was my student. She was a bright girl. She was about to graduate.
Ashley went to a party and never came home. She was last seen with a white man she was apparently staying with in a rundown shack on the Blackfeet Reservation in Montana.
She wanted to study environmental science. Yeah, she was somebody who just had a really good heart. She lit up every room. She had a great sense of humor, was really smart. The family and the community do have a general sense of, if not who did it, who at least knows more information than they're telling. And unfortunately, law enforcement don't always pursue those leads.
Anita Lucchese is executive director of Sovereign Bodies Institute that's countering violence against Native women, girls, and boys. She's also compiling a database of missing and murdered women, girls, LGBTQ, and Two-Spirit Native peoples. Many families say they face a reluctance by police to take their cases seriously.
I've definitely seen law enforcement shame victims for being substance users or being unsheltered or make assumptions about women being involved in sex work, and whether they are or aren't, they still are missing and deserve to be found. We work with a family who their loved one was wrongfully perceived by law enforcement as a sex worker simply because they would see her walking down the street all the time. And they said, well, she walked the streets. She knew what it was. And the family said she walked because she didn't have a car.
A complex legal system means many tribes do not have the legal powers or resources to prosecute non-natives who commit these crimes on their lands. Other cases fall between state and federal legislation. It means that all kinds of crimes and disappearances go unreported and uninvestigated. It's hard to get figures, but we know in 2016 there were 5,712 missing women and girls. It's likely the number is far higher.
Tribal communities are ground zero for sex trafficking. We have an awful lot of people that are transient, so they're coming from this, you know, from city. So they're being trafficked from reservations to Minneapolis and all of these things. And when you're homeless or transient and all of these different things, it's hard to keep track of.
But trafficking doesn't always mean being taken against your will. Anita Lucchese knows this firsthand.
I was trafficked by my boyfriend, or the person that I thought was my boyfriend. My trafficker was from a reservation in Montana, and he grew up seeing his mom trafficked during an oil boom there. He was also Native, and he was trafficked as a child himself and grew up seeing his mom trafficked, and it taught him that it was normal for sex to be transactional.
Sheila Lam is from the White Earth Ojibwe and Cherokee Nations. She works with girls aged between 13 and 20 in the Minnesota port city of Duluth, traditionally a hub of sex trafficking.
Quite often, we find that these are runaways that are lost and alone, so it makes grooming them easier. At times, we're finding that they are from extremely low-income, dysfunctional homes looking for love, but other times, they're just simply snatched off of the streets. We sit right here on Lake Superior, which is one of the Great Lakes, and we're also very close to the international border for Canada. So trafficking on ships and on the interstate, we're within 2 hours of the Twin Cities area, and Minneapolis and St. Paul are both well-known hubs for trafficking as well.
Trafficking is more than being snatched off the street. It can be a form of coercion where girls are groomed and bribed with money, clothes, or alcohol and drugs to go with men. This could be at a party, a major sporting event, casinos, workplaces, or wherever large groups of men congregate. Remember the Standing Rock oil pipeline protest in North Dakota of 2016? When hundreds gathered to protest the building of a pipeline through sacred Sioux lands. There are several other pipelines that bring oil and gas down from Canada to the U.S. crossing reservation lands. Many tribes oppose them, not only on environmental grounds, but because they say they're a danger to communities due to the hundreds of mostly male migrant workers who were brought in to construct and repair them. Temporary workers housed in so-called man camps can bring unwanted activities around alcohol, drugs, and sex work. Anita Lucchese.
Those pipelines bring in drugs, they bring in gang violence, and they bring in sexual assaults and trafficking. It kind of creates kind of a social version of an oil spill. The longer you leave it, the harder it is to clean up. And I would say that's true not just for oil and gas, but even things like where I live in Northern California is the hub of the cannabis industry. I think anytime you have a highly rural area that doesn't have law enforcement that are available, much less care about these kinds of issues, and you have a large concentration of men from outside the community who live in this kind of lawless state, you're going to see violence against our women, especially when I think resources extraction breeds this kind of perspective that anything's for the taking, whether it's, you know, gold in the ground or oil in the ground or marijuana to grow, anything's for the taking. And that gets applied to our women too.
Canadian firm Enbridge Energy is planning a major new pipeline later this year. It crosses three northern states and impacts several tribes. Enbridge told us that they will not be constructing any so-called man camps to house their workers. Company spokeswoman Jennifer Smith says they've introduced mandatory awareness training on sex trafficking for the workforce.
Every person that is going to be working on Line 3, even our subcontractors, they'll all go through the same training and get the same message of zero tolerance They'll get the human trafficking prevention and awareness training. They get actually cultural awareness training, making sure that the whole workforce is living those values of safety, integrity, and respect, and meeting the intent of our statement on business conduct.
Officer Kelly Hatfield of the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Police Department leads the tribe's United Against Sex Trafficking Task Force. She was instrumental in the development of Line 3's human trafficking prevention plan.
I don't want the misnomer that human trafficking or sex trafficking is specific, limited to just, you know, pipeline projects. Sex trafficking is a constant. It was here before the pipeline projects, it's going to be here during the pipeline projects, and it's going to be here after the pipeline projects are done. So I just want people to understand that this is an ongoing issue. We're not going to get rid of it, but minimize it. I'm hoping with all this work that we've been doing in preparation for the Line 3 that that's not going to be an issue for us, that Enbridge has done due diligence on their end as far as trying to make sure that that type of activity that comes from these MAC camps doesn't occur. And of course, we've been doing due diligence on our end from a law enforcement side. I'm just hoping that my work here at Fond du Lac kind of speaks for itself, and that the community members can see that I'm out there working on their behalf when it comes to this topic of sex trafficking within the Native community.
The practicalities of policing vast rural areas with limited police resources, let alone the complicated system of deciding which law enforcement agency is responsible, mean many crimes go unnoticed and unreported. Ironically, it was the disappearance of an oil worker on her own reservation in North Dakota that began Lissa Yellowbird Chase's mission to help find missing Native people.
It was a white man that went missing on the reservation, and he was treated like Native Americans are off the reservation, I thought. So it sparked my interest, and I became very involved in that case. We did, you know, work together to finally get the attention of the authorities, and gave them all the information we had. And it resulted in some of the parties being held accountable and basically imprisoned for their part in that murder.
After that, Lissa was inundated with requests from families seeking help tracing a loved one. In 2018, she successfully located the body of Olivia Lone Bear 8 months after she'd gone missing. Law enforcement failed to find her, but Lissa used sonar equipment and found Olivia in a truck at the bottom of a lake. The FBI is now treating the case as a potential murder or manslaughter investigation. Since then, Lissa Yellowbird has become a full-time investigator and advocate for her people, stepping in to help when many families feel the system has let them down. White Earth advocate Lisa Bruner wants to see tribes have more legal powers to prosecute crimes committed on their lands.
Up until 1978, our tribes had criminal jurisdiction over anybody who committed crimes on our lands, whether you're a Native or non-Native, whether you're a Native from a different tribe, it didn't matter. And as it should be. But non-natives on our lands are no longer subject to our laws or our jurisdiction in a criminal context. And so this is why in tribal communities we see so much victimization and non-natives come in here, because predators are intelligent, like the ones that raped my daughter. They know they can come here because the United States basically granted them diplomatic immunity.
Mary Punish Codine was elected in 2016 as state legislator in the House of Representatives for the state of Minnesota. Mary is from the Standing Rock Sioux tribe and one of a growing number of Native women taking office at a state and federal level. An appalling event in 2017 led her to take action.
In North Dakota, a young woman, Savannah Graywind, went missing. She was in her late term of pregnancy, went to visit a neighbor in the apartment building they lived in and just disappeared.
A concerned mom who wants her missing pregnant daughter to come home safely. Good evening, everyone. We begin with new information in the search for Savannah Graywind.
Her body was found a few days later in the river. The baby had been removed from her womb, and they later found that child in the apartment of a neighbor in that same building. It was then I had this epiphany, like, wait a minute, you are a legislator. You are the person that is supposed to be doing this.
After the horrific murder of Savannah Graywin, Mary put together a bill to establish a task force for MMIW, or Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women. It was passed at the end of 2018, and she was so encouraged by the overwhelming support the bill received. Mary would like to see every state following suit.
Every single legislator, both in our House of Representatives and the Senate, supported this and voted for it, which is almost unbelievable, unheard of, and quite historic. And the really sad state is that nobody really knew about this. This was just new information. And when the general public, when our legislature learned of it, they were horrified, and they were appropriately horrified. And as I was putting this task force together back in 2017, I went around to all these different agencies, the sheriff's departments, the coroners, Department of Justice, Public Safety, Department of Health, all these different agencies, and said, I'm working on this piece of legislation. We want you to be a part of this legislation. Will you participate it in a good way, with a good heart and intentionally? And they all said yes, right from the start.
So are there causes for optimism? Savannah's Act and the Not Invisible Act of 2019 will help identify and combat violent crime within Indian country and help form a uniform response to the issue of MMIW and make it easier to get accurate figures. There is a growing number of Native American women going into politics. There are now 18 women congressional candidates in 2020 who identify as Native American and 3 Native American women candidates for the U.S. Senate. Mary Kunesh Pudin is encouraged by these numbers.
I would say that the American Indians, Native Americans, are feeling empowered across the nation, and a record number of American Indian women and men are running for office and have built, I think, a generation now where we can look back and say, these are all the injustices that were done to us, but we've persevered, we've educated ourselves, we've built support systems.
We are survivors.
We are now ready to participate in a good way.
We are survivors because our ancestors survived. And there are so many.
But we also need to hold fast to our cultural values and beliefs and turn to our traditional ways of learning, living, and healing. Sheila Lamb.
My portion deals with the cultural aspects, teaching some of our ways of healing, some of our traditional ways of reconnecting with our Mother Earth, of being able to understand our connection to everything.
You need to believe that this is curable. You need to believe that this is treatable, you know, and that's where the spiritual portion comes in for our people. We are very spiritual. You know, our ancestors are there supporting us. And so, yeah, you have to stay optimistic.
Lissa Yellowbird wants to pay respects to our Native men who are dismantling the traits of toxic masculinity and standing up for our women and actively working to prevent the violence that is also committed within our Indigenous communities.
So we do have some men that are speaking out now, Native men especially, and they are addressing this issue, and they are putting themselves out there, and they are threatening the masculinity of other men, and it makes it quite uncomfortable. But those men, I love those men. The only way we're going to heal is to throw this out on the table. And they're acknowledging their need to heal, and they're inviting other people to come with. And that's just beautiful to me.
And for Carrie Colfer, it is imperative to be open and able to communicate about topics that have conventionally been taboo subjects for us amongst our people, such as violence, substance abuse, mental health issues, all of which are the result of inherited trauma through colonization.
I think this is an issue that's really difficult for people to talk about, for families and communities to talk about. So I think what we need is for communities to begin having these discussions and begin having, you know, solutions to how their individual communities want to tackle this violence and want to really do something about it. And it can't just be up to Native women. It can't just be up to survivors. It has to be up to everyone to have these really difficult conversations.
She also feels that stronger laws to protect our women and girls is needed. No more Stolen Sisters.
I'm optimistic about it because I know Native people, and I know Native people are resilient, and I know that we can get through this, you know, this point in our history. But I also know that more and more people in Indian country and outside of it are talking about missing and murdered Indigenous women. So I'm really optimistic that more people are starting to hear about it and care about it. And then I'm optimistic because we have these solutions in legislation already, and all we need to do is pass them.
You've been listening to Missing and Murdered, America's Forgotten Native Women and Girls. I'm Leandra Neffen. The producer was Maggie Eyre.
Thank you for listening. There will be more from the documentary podcast soon. The documentary is just one of our BBC World Service podcasts. There are many others to choose from.
Oh my God, I didn't realise I could get messages. I just listened to yours. They're amazing.
Let's face it, the news isn't always that positive. But it doesn't have to be that way.
I wanted to show the world outside that we in Gaza, we can do lots of things.
On the People Fixing the World podcast from the BBC World Service, we look for stories about how people are solving even the most difficult problems.
Something strange is going on. I said, the police, they're being nice to me.
From climate change, police brutality, sickness and inequality, to saving dolphins and making people happier, we look at the problems that can seem almost insurmountable.
They don't really think that we're doing this, we're making a difference, until after they see what we've done.
And we meet the people who are already making things better.
He's going to make it. Come on.
People Fixing the World, from the BBC World Service.
People fixing the world.
Search for People Fixing the World wherever you get your podcasts.
What drama. I feel so emotional.